The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Ben Pfeiffer, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host Max Carlin. Max, how's it going?
I'm doing all right, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing all right as well. I'm excited to continue our mailbag episode. This is part two. Part one would have went out on Monday. I'm going to keep answering the questions that all of you listeners sent in. So without rambling any further, let's get into it.
The wait is finally over. Football's in full effect. With many teams strutting their stuff, you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
So our first question is from Hoops_NBA_. Who are the ball handlers that look likely to go in the late 20s to 30s that you think are potential steals?
I missed late when I was writing this, so I have like a question mark, maybe Kyra Cole if they're there, but like they're not going to be there late 20s, so ignore that. But if they fall, Kyra and Cole, because they do fall in some mocks. The main one is Riller, really. Which seems like late first, early second is kind of his range. Just like a special scorer, really with legit like primary scorer upside, with his elite first step and slashing craft and finishing with both hands and explosion and some of the space creation on jumpers. And yes, there are like lots of there are problems with Riller and why I think I'm a little lower than some people while still being high. I think there's like, you can only be so low on a guy with his real scoring upside. But yes, I mean, like, if he's not like a really high level shooter with his decision making concerns and the age and the defense being bad, but like he's a pretty special scoring guard prospect, and certainly I think late first is an awesome value. And then like the other one that I really like is Malachi Flynn, who best pick and roll player in the class, I think. Just like really, really good shooter. You know, might not be a great finisher in the NBA, but is crafty and has an awesome runner game. And just with the snakes and the footwork and stuff, I think it's going to be fine enough. And, you know, despite being 6'1", really tries hard defensively, is strong and laterally quick at the point of attack and really smart defensively and a playmaker. Just an awesome guard prospect with, I think, some real, like a little bit of sneaky upside if the shooting or the pick and roll offense is really potent. So those are the two like main ones I had. And then there's like a couple other ones that I'm a little lower on, but still kind of fall into this range. Those being Tyrell Terry, Devon Dotson, Nico Mannion, and even Cassius Winston. But those all those prospects have like some useful skills. And if, you know, for different roles, like if you need like an off-ball third guard, like Nico Mannion could be a really solid. If you need like a bench score shooter type, to run pick and rolls, Cassius Winston would be a good get. So yeah, I mean, those are the main guards that I had on my list.
I just had Malachi and Riller for very different reasons. Malachi, I'm really confident in as a rotational guard, for all the reasons you laid out. Just a really, really talented all around player. Believe in him a ton as a shooter. Perfect pick and roll player. Like incredibly well rounded there. And yeah, believe in him a lot as a defender, that he is highly instinctual, tries really hard, very good at the point of attack, very good off the ball, great communicator, just a very, very good all-around player. Meanwhile, Riller, I feel like there's almost no way you can't buy into his driving ability. there's nothing really to be skeptical of there. He has one of a kind first step. He creates leverage with his strength. He is incredibly skilled with his footwork. He is an incredibly crafty finisher with great touch and just a ton of skill around there and ambidexterity, balance, strength, vertical athleticism. He has everything you could possibly want out of a guard finisher and a guard slasher. Yeah, just like hard not to buy in there. I have questions on a lot of other stuff, on the level of the pull-up, on defense as a decision maker. You know, lots and lots of questions with him, but hard not to buy him as a driver, and that's worth a lot. Yeah, like you said, just like a genuine guard creator prospect who's going to be available in the late first or early second. Really a worthwhile play. You know, both of those were high on our lists on those recent episodes on best plays in the class. I didn't have anyone else because this goes back to the best plays thing, that after those guys, I don't want to pay an early second for Nico or Teo Maledon or Cassius Winston. I'll just take whichever one falls to me later. So yeah, I would say for this question, go back and check out the best plays pod. But the two that I like a lot are Malachi and Riller as well.
Yep. Started off the second episode just like the first one with a question about Malachi and Riller. So let's get into our second question. This is from Kyle _Jones 77. During the season, how do you go about seeing the most amount of games / players? Do you just pick a game to watch and watch other teams at other times? Just wondering how you go about, say, a Saturday full of games and prospects playing at the same time. Thanks, love the show.
Not a lot of method to it, honestly. I just kind of watch games, try to watch them after the fact. It's much more efficient. If there are big games between multiple big prospects, definitely make a point of seeing those. Those I'm more inclined to see live. Because also they're just fun. But, you know, even if that's the case, you're going to want to go back and watch them. I find that it's much more effective from an analysis standpoint to watch guys individually as opposed to trying to watch, like, five or six guys at the same time. But, yeah, so that can mean, you know, watching the same game multiple times for different guys. But, yeah, not a ton of method to it necessarily, just kind of watching as I please.
Yeah, not much method. Like I said, like we'll watch. I don't watch much live college basketball, honestly, like besides the big games. And even then, I'm not really like thinking too critically at that point because it's just like, you know, I can't rewind or I'm usually not taking, you know, deep or thoughtful notes. I'm just kind of watching to watch. Yeah, I mean, when I'm rewatching, definitely the big games. Also, just focusing more on like the more relevant prospects. We talked about this like maybe before, but like, I would love to spend like an equal amount of time on like all of the prospects and like know everything about all of the fringe prospects, but that's just like not a thing I realistically have time for. So it's just more worthwhile to me to spend more time on, you know, Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball and Killian Hayes and really get to know the intricacies of them than, you know, spending even close to the same amount of time on, I don't know, like Jake Toulson or like someone like that. Even though, like, just watching games, I'm going to get a conception of all of these guys, at least a little bit. Like, I'm going to come across them. I usually won't, like, watch a game multiple times for different players unless there's, like, a ton of prospects. I don't know, like, something like, Duke, Michigan State, something like that. I don't know. That's just off the top of my head. Just a game with five, six, seven prospects. I think it's worth consuming multiple times, but generally, like, yeah, not much of a method of my madness. Every time I try to, like, create, like, a watch list that I try to stick to, I never am able to. So, yeah, I mean, just kind of haphazard and just prioritizing the most important games and the most important prospects.
All right, next we've got from Bryce with then a lot of letters and numbers. I think D'Angelo Russell struggles a lot to get good shots because he's not quick enough. Get by his defender. Will Killian Hayes have the same issue? Is he significantly quicker? Are you hoping for a different role?
Well, I mean, there is that. I mean, Killian Hayes is like similarly not like elite burst wise. So I think he's better than D'Angelo already from an explosion standpoint. Killian's just like a lot bigger. First of all, he's bigger and stronger than D'Angelo. He has like, though that like the lack of top end quickness is going to be an issue for Killian at times, he has ways to counter that issue that D'Angelo just doesn't. First being strength and touch and size and just being able to go through and around and over defenders and use the, you know, the deceleration finishes and the touch and the footwork and craft that D'Angelo just doesn't display to actually get to the lane and draw fouls and finish. And then like, so like that's what I think the role as an on-ball guy, Killian just as a scorer, I think is a different level or projects to be a different level than D'Angelo, just because all D'Angelo can really do is like pull up mid-ranges and like snake floaters. I think Killian has more counters to when defenses decide to take that away. Though that's not even Killian's game, is like the forward momentum pull-ups. He's more of a backwards momentum off-dribble shooter anyway. So I think they're pretty functionally different besides like the great lefty passer with not top-end quickness. They're pretty different in every other way. And that doesn't even, you know, like account for the fact that like Killian's like a million times better defensively. But yeah, I mean, I think like while there like are broad similarities, we talked about this last episode as well, or not two episodes ago now, I guess, on bad, when we did bad comparisons with PD, how this is a comparison you're going to see a lot. And though like it might look sensical on the surface, there's just a lot of differentiating factors that might be kind of small, but are pretty key. So.
Yeah, they're pretty stylistically distinct. They're like, obviously they're both kind of slow lefties. I think Killian at this point is a lot faster than D'Lo, like a lot burstier. It's just the idea that Killian is wildly slow, I think, is outdated, because he used to be. He used to be like D'Lo. Wow, this guy cannot get by anyone. He is unbelievably slow, but he's made big strides there. And I think there's more room to grow with increased lower body flexibility from him. So I think a different level of burst, but that's not even the main point. The main point is that Killian wins differently. He wins more with this sharp, with the sharp change of direction, that he does have a level of strength that D'Lo definitely doesn't have, that he does have this refined footwork. I think he just wins differently. I think he wins in a much more diverse manner. Like Ben said, he has more counters. He's not the level of tough shot maker that D'Lo is, never will be. Just pretty stylistically different players on the offensive end. And then, yeah, and that doesn't even mention defense. So I think they're pretty different. There are some very, very broad surface level comparisons that make some sense. And like the general idea of like not compromising the defense enough to really, really drive team offense, it was like, I think used to be a much more reasonable criticism of Killian. But until yeah, I don't think that it really holds up beyond like the absolute surface level of both being like kind of slow lefties.
Yeah. All right. Next question from at Bobby James 98801. Is Riller's ceiling outcome similar in value to Kemba? Obviously, they're different stylistically, but as high level scoring guards with average and unspectacular passing and hoping to be net neutral / small negatives on D.
Yeah. So stylistic differences are huge, but not going to get into that because Bobby seems to know that. I don't think that that's really accurate. I think that probably understates Kemba as a passer rather significantly. He's quite good, like not unbelievable, but certainly good. Kemba, I think that very much understates Kemba defensively, that I don't think that he's necessarily that bad. Like he definitely has size issues. And can be attacked by virtue of that. But he also is like a very, very active and involved team defender who tries really hard. And that gives you a floor that's something. Whereas Riller could be a pretty disastrous defensive player. He really doesn't try very often. So I don't really think so. And I think it just generally kind of understates how ridiculously good of an offensive player Kemba is. He's one of the best offensive players in basketball. He's really, really good. And that's beyond even the stylistic elements. So I think it's just like a little bit of a disservice to Kemba, who is a really incredible player.
Yeah. I mean, like, I understand where like they're coming from, but I do think it's a bit optimistic. Yeah, I mean, scoring wise, like, I think maybe Riller's top end value gets close, but like, I think Riller could be a really, really good scorer shot creator, obviously in a different way, like more slashing and finishing oriented. But yeah, I mean, just not, I don't think he'll ever be as good of a passer or a decision maker. Like, Kemba is like legitimately a pretty good passer. Like, I'm not as familiar with Kemba as you are, but like, I know he's quite a good passer. I think defensively they could be like similar. Like, yeah, Kemba's a pretty good defender now, but like, I think Riller does have like some tools and flashes, lateral mobility and the occasional rotation. And like in 7 years, I mean, if Riller is still around as like a nuclear scorer, who's to say he hasn't, you know, improved his engagement defensively under, you know, a good system or a good coach. I mean, I generally agree with you that I think it's optimistic and kind of underrates what Kemba is.
And then I think that the stylistic differences matter a lot when you're talking about how they derive their impact, because when you consider that Kemba can then slide into a role where he is becoming the 1B or 2 to someone like Jason Tatum, because he's such a good off-ball player, that he has really, really great relocation ability, that he is a great shooter, that he can still maintain a tremendous amount of offensive value when he slides into a different role, arguably a role that he's more suited for, at least at this point in his career. And he still maintains very, very high level offensive impact. Riller, I don't think that's the case for him, not nearly the off-ball player that Kemba is. So I think that comes into play. The stylistic differences are tied to the impact differences.
Yeah, I think that covers it.
Yeah. Next, we've got from Marcos Levy, PTY. If the Mavs trade up into the top 10, who should they take?
I think if Okoro or Vassell is there, I think that's how you prioritize for them. Just get, like, I think Okoro first and foremost, point of attack, like wing stopper, I think is really, would really be useful for them. Obviously Vassell would be incredibly useful as well in different ways, though. I think I think Vassell might actually be a better offensive fit, because you're probably not going to like maximize Okoro offensively in a
Luka. Well, dude, you can use Okoro as a role man.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Yes.
That would be fun. But still, I think you're probably not maximizing him offensively in a Luka-led offense. Whereas Vassell, like, probably not either, because you're not going to have Vassell take difficult shots. But I think he's the spot-up shooting there is useful. Both would be exceptional in different ways. You know, Vassell more off-ball defense, Okoro more on, but both still give you some of the other. And I think if you want to go like the secondary creator route, I mean, if Killian Hayes falls to where they're trading up to, you go get Killian Hayes and you pair Killian and Luka and you just like destroy the world with those two. Yes, like Killian, unspectacular off-ball player at the moment, but you know, if you got a chance to nab a prospect as good as Killian, that's a concern that you kind of overlook, I think, and worry about fixing and orienting later when he's just like so much, like just imagining having like two passers of that level, like 6'5" plus, that level of, obviously Luka being as incredible he is with like some of that scoring. But yeah, I mean, I would love that. And then Maxi as well, for like kind of a more traditional secondary, who like actually is going to be like incredible off ball next to Luka with his three level scoring, shooting, which we believe in, attacking off. Just like imagining like the openings Luka can create for Maxi, just like to absolutely eat up and destroy attacking off the catch, and finishing through and around guys. And then obviously defensively, he gives you what you want next to Luka, like Killian does. Those are like the options. I think a Mavs trade up would actually be a lot of fun. Like, yeah, I mean, they'd have potential to have some really good options. So those are like the four big ones that I think of. But there, I mean, there's even other prospects that they could consider and would be pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I don't think they should, and I don't know how they even would, because they're out two future picks still. But if they do it, I said Okoro and Vassell. Probably would lean Vassell there, but yeah, just get like a really, really awesome wing defender. Vassell, if he's blowing a bomb, makes a lot of sense. Okoro, if he's gonna be your other big next to Porzingis, I think makes a lot of sense and would be really fun.
A big invitation of like Porzingis, Maxi, and like Maxi Kleba and Okoro, like
and Dwight Powell.
And Dwight Powell, like, yeah, like you want your lob threat, you have Okoro.
Yeah,
not exactly. 6'9" Okoro, that would be a lot. 6'7" whatever, 6'9" Okoro would be.
No, but Okoro is such a brilliant below the rim finisher, and sure. Would be amazing passing in downhill situation.
It would be fun.
Yeah, and is a really good cutter. I actually do think it makes a lot of sense, but Vassell is probably a bit more seamless.
Both would be good. I mean,
yeah. All right, next we've got from @Jackson_Het. What's your ideal draft night for the Celtics?
I don't know. I think this is pretty clear. I have like a pretty easy three. I assume they don't make a trade. I didn't do any trades here for them. I don't know if you did. I just made all three picks as if I were making, you know, if I were forced to make the picks. 14, there's like potentially quite a few good options, but I went with Maxey. Like, have talked up his potential as a secondary next to Jason Tatum ad nauseum. Like, like attacking off the catch with Tatum creating advantages with the pull up. Passing gets opened up, doesn't have to create advantages in isolation. Defensively, he works. It's perfect. It's magical. It's beautiful. 26, I had Bulmaro. I think you want to stash with these three picks. I've lowered on Bulmaro recently to where I don't think he's like a lottery talent level guy anymore, but like still top 20, and this would be value for me just as an upside bet with his, you know, elite defense at the point of attack and on the team side with the ball handling and the passing. Just hoping the shooting comes along or he improves in some other self creation area as he ages. And then at 30, I had Tillman to get your proto Grant, you're another just awesome big who can compete in the playoffs. And I think I made Max happy with this one. I know I did, but that would be awesome if you could nab Tillman, have him as like another rotational big man with his wealth of skills, the short roll, immaculate decision making, to his ball handling. I think Boston's a good a spot as any to get him to shoot spot ups. That would be a stupendous draft haul for the Celtics. So what did you have, Max?
Ben, would you like to guess exactly what I had?
Do you have the exact same thing?
I had Tyrese Maxey at 14 and then Xavier Tillman and Leandro Bulmaro at 20. No, I didn't put an order for those two. I just said Bulmaro and Tillman at 26 and 30. If you're using all three picks, you kind of need a stash.
Bulmaro's really the only one. Like,
the only, yeah, because I would not assume that Maledon or Poku can be stashed. International seasons have started, but Bulmaro is playing with FC Barcelona. Will be a stash, and I like him better than Maledon. Not better than Poku, but I think it makes a lot of sense. Bulmaro could definitely play for, like, if he just gets to an acceptable spot as a spot up guy, he can for sure play for the Celtics. Has the ball handling, decision making that they want out of their wings, ball handlers, frankly. But I think Bulmaro makes a lot of sense as a stash. Tillman, perfect big with the Celtics. Pass on the short roll, handle in DHO. Defensively, you know, has everything you want. I think he can play high on the floor in hedges and soft hedges as he did at Michigan State, not a switch guy, but you know, relatively mobile. And then in spite of his lacking vertical and lacking size, I think that he does have the length and timing to be an exceptional helper and protector. Just such a smart player, such a great communicator. Offensively, such a good screener, would be really, really helpful for Jason Tatum, very much in the Tice mold. I think that Tillman just makes a ton of sense as the long-term Tice replacement. Another thing that I talked about on that winning plays pod with Brian and Ryan, Tillman really makes a ton of sense for the Celtics. Maxey for all the reasons that Ben laid out, that he's really, really good secondary guy playing off Tatum.
Listen up, fellas, because today we have a new Manscaped product alert. Manscaped just released the Weed Whacker Nose and Ear Hair Trimmer. Take a look in the mirror and I guarantee you'll see hair sticking out of those holes. It's time to keep your ear and nose hair looking as nice as your clean-shaven pubes. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Weed Whacker. This nose and ear hair trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. The premium Manscaped Weed Whacker uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. Its intelligently contoured design enhances the trimming experience, and it's waterproof, which makes for easy operation and cleaning. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code armchair at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code armchair. What are you waiting for? Go whack your weeds. The wait is finally over. Football's in full effect. With many teams strutting their stuff, you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Yeah, so I think pretty unanimously would be exceptional for Boston. Let's go to our next question from at BLVCK block underscore X. What is Jaden McDaniels' ceiling slash floor?
Good three and rim protection forward is his ceiling. Maybe like not creation ability. There's some way to get some value out of his handling, because he does have like a bunch of shake in that handle and can actually kind of use that. But there's then nothing that he can do with that, because he's such a putrid decision maker and like is not that good of a shooter. Like, yeah, and like will never ever finish because he weighs 45 pounds. So maybe there's nothing there with that, and it's just a weird skill that's kind of useless. But good three and rim protection forward is the ceiling, and his floor is not in the NBA.
It's pretty simple, I think. Floor, solid role player. Someone who hits spot ups, can maybe attack a closeout, protect the rim from the weak side. I think we'll always have other issues defensively with his awareness and instincts generally, just because, like, yes, it was good at Washington, but in EYBL before he played in the zone, all of that was very worrisome. And then I think because of that, like, the floor is out of the NBA totally. Like, he's too limited physically. The rim protection doesn't translate out of the zone. I think the shot's like going to be fine, but like if he doesn't have the rim protection or the defense, I think it's not really an NBA player anyway. So yeah, pretty simple there.
Yeah. Next we've got from at Dello underscore twist. Who are the top three first round prospects to be out of the league in 4 years?
I thought this one was like very straightforward. I have Ramsey, Oturu, and Stewart for all of the reasons that we've like.
I'm not sure those guys are going to go in the first, though.
You don't think so? I think they all could.
I don't think Oturu is going to. Ramsey might, and I think Stewart will.
I think Ramsey is pretty consistently projected in the first, and I think you see Oturu enough to make it like plausible.
Yeah, it's plausible. I tried to go for guys that I thought were more like.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I suppose. I mean, that might have been a more fun application of this question. But still, I mean, Stewart will, I think. Though Stewart, I have like a little bit of hope for. Like, cause we talked about, like, people do love his character and that stuff matters, and he plays really hard. So I could see him sticking around, but like not being a good NBA player. Ramsey and Oturu, we've talked about enough. So.
Yeah, I didn't put Ramsey or Oturu because I didn't think that there were locks to go in the first round. So this question I found to be very hard, because I just went by like the ESPN top 30, and I looked at a few other things to try to get an idea of who was going to go in the first, but I didn't consistently see that those guys really were expected to go in the first. But Stewart is definitely, it seems, going to go in the first. So I had Stewart, even though, I do actually think he might stick around because of character and motor.
Even if he sticks, I don't think it'll be for like real basketball reasons, though. Like.
Yeah, if he sticks, he will be really bad. And then speaking of sticks, I also had Jalen Stick Smith. Like I said, this was actually hard for me because I didn't see that many guys who were actually consistently in top 30s who I was super confident in. I don't really think that this is even the case for Jalen Smith. However, I could definitely see it. Like, he really might just have no position, and his help rim protection ability is just completely cannibalized by his lack of mobility, and he, I think, pretty clearly can't play the five due to his lack of strength. Is not viably, like, this is a guy who couldn't chase Luka Garza around screens off the ball. Like, he's not mobile enough to defend the perimeter in the NBA. And then it's just like, all he has really nice big man shooting offer, but I think that the rest of the skills just don't work together in concert to make a sensible player. I could definitely see him washing out. And then the other one I put was Tyler Bay. I like Tyler Bay relatively. I think he's a worthwhile gamble, but like he might be able to do nothing on offense. Is a pretty harmful decision maker there. And then defensively, that yeah, the high points are really, really high, but like we've been saying, misses a lot of rotations, is generally kind of overactive, and is weird positionally, is pretty weak while being old. There are reasons to be concerned. And then if that's, you know, you're dealing with a huge offensive negative just to get that, I'm not sure it'll necessarily be worth it.
Go.
No, I didn't have anything else.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say. I feel fairly confident in Smith just because of the shooting and like Bay. But I suppose if like there's no other options, like those are two pretty solid ones. Like I think there's definitely a chance that they flame out. Like
to be very clear, Jemias and Atura would be much higher on this list if they go on the first. I was just trying to find guys that seem more likely to go in the first. But Jemias and Atura, if they go in the first, would 100% be higher on this list. Trying to think if there are any other.
I think Tyrell Terry is kind of sneaky. Like,
yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah, because like, I mean, I think he could go like kind of high. Like, like, cause like there have been some like lottery things thrown out. I don't know how real that is. Like, could just be smoke. But like I like love Tyrell Terry like personally, but like acknowledge that like he might just never have like the frame to succeed in the NBA. Like, so I think that's definitely one that I just thought of now that I think definitely applies here.
Who are some other contenders that, like, if they go in the first? I mean, like, Bolmaro, I guess, conceivably could just never play in the NBA. I don't think that will happen, but, like, he's going to be a stash maybe for multiple years. Like, he might just never play in the NBA. I thought about if like, Vernon Carey goes in the first or Peyton Pritchard, I could definitely see those guys flaming out pretty badly.
Yeah, maybe, like, if Reggie Perry goes in the first, like, I don't think
it's
going to happen.
Oh, or, yeah. Who?
If Hughes or Nwora sneak in?
I don't think they're going to go in the first.
You never know with Titan shooting. Like,
yeah, I kind of think they would stick around.
Cassius Stanley?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, if Cassius Stanley went in the first,
I think that seems pretty likely or possible as well. Like,
yeah, he might totally flame out if he went in the first. So, okay, I feel like that's a pretty solid list of guys who don't take them in the first because they might be out of the league.
All right.
Next, you can go. Okay, from at Vince Chicken, why the hell is Tyrese Maxey stock all over the place? Why isn't Kareem Mene a first-round pick at 6'5", athletic, and a decent shooter? Ben, would you like to start this and end this quickly? Is Kareem Mene a real prospect?
No.
Yeah. We'll give a bit more context on that because these guys who take weird paths. I think have a mystique that definitely helps them if people try to capitalize on that mystique to advance their stock. But Kareem Mene, Ben, why is Kareem Mene not remotely a prospect?
The only real appeal to me is like he's like legitimately very quick. Like he can break down guys with bursts and get all the way to the rim. But like, what else does he do? He's never been a particularly good shooter. Not in FIBA, not in anything else I could find. The decision making is a struggle. He's too frail to me to really finish. And then defensively, just kind of it's not very complicated. Like, I don't have much depth to speak because I don't like think it's worth or really even know much depth about like the intricacies of Kareem Mene. Like, he just lacks like it. Like I think you can pretty clearly see when someone's like a legitimate prospect and when they're not. I think Mene is just not.
Counter to anyone like asking why Kareem Mene is not a high-end prospect would be why on earth is he a high-end prospect? Like the burden kind of goes the other way if you're arguing for a fringe guy. Like he's just isn't very good at anything except burst.
You have to be really good to make the NBA, like especially as a guard. Like
yeah, like frankly, he was not good in that FIBA run that gets hyped up. Like he just wasn't. I feel bad for him. It's like unfair expectations have been put on him. I would say if you're wondering why Kareem Mene is not a prospect, go watch those FIBA games. They're on YouTube. They're easy to find. He just wasn't very good. Like, he's got burst, but otherwise he's not a very good shooter. He's not a good defender. He's not a good decision maker. There's like nothing really to like there. And I don't even think that he's like necessarily that exceptional from a burst standpoint.
Yeah, like, he's really good, but like there's a lot of really quick guards in the world. Like,
yeah.
All right. Should we talk about Maxi now?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also going to be pretty quick because we've done this a million times. Just like, why is his stock all over the place? I mean, statistically, you see like he shot under 30% from three and people get worried about the shot. You know, 6-3 combo who can't shoot is what you'll hear sometimes. From people who are like more invested, you'll see both the low stocks, under 2 block and steal percentage, which are kind of benchmarks you want top prospects to hit. He's probably not a good defender at 6'3". Those are like the broad, I think, niceties like you see about Maxi that where people did discount him, when both of those, when you look with any sort of depth, just aren't true. Where like the shooting, I think, is going to be just fine because of the volume and the shot versatility and his shooting track before high school. And then the defense, like, he's just a much better team defender. Like, I hate to say just like watch the games, but like genuinely just like he might not be as exceptional of a playmaker as he was billed as or as he could be, but like he makes the little plays, the stunts, the digs, the closeouts, like the smaller, more unnoticeable rotations. He's just going to be a really good player. And like the Kentucky thing as well is always priced in. So, I mean, that's kind of like why Maxi isn't valued as high as he should be. And I'm sure there's other reasons, but.
Yeah. So I think that it's twofold. There's the stats angle that, yeah, didn't shoot well from three. The stocks are not good. But yeah, so for people who get worried about his shooting percentages, I think they're just like, for the most part, not aware of his track record as a shooter, that he has a very, very extensive track record as a very good shooter. For whatever reason, they're discounting that he was still an elite free throw shooter at Kentucky. I think not aware of other aspects of his game that were a bit more hidden at Kentucky, like his insanely refined runner game. And then I think it's just a general perception of him, like, You get into an archetype situation where you're like, okay, he's a small combo who is not exceptional at anything. But I do think that that kind of misses the point, because first of all, he is exceptional at things. Like, he's an exceptional guard finisher. He has really good burst. He has like uniquely good contortion ability. He has the best balance in the class. He is highly ambidextrous. He's highly crafty as a finisher. He's just a great guard finishing prospect, and can certainly get there, at least attacking existing advantages as a, off the catch. That, yeah, he is going to be a versatile shooter and a good one. And that, yeah, his defense just gets wildly underrated. I think that his versatility on the ball is understated because he didn't do it as much at Kentucky, but definitely saw it pre-Kentucky. I was just watching one of the Auburn games, the second one, I think, recently again, and he had some good moments against Okoro. Like, he definitely has ability to, like, not big wings for sure, but I think that he can fight with some wings just on back of his motor and strength. And then, yeah, I think he's a really good team defender, and people that just gets lost because of the stocks. Like, he is one of the best guys on stunts and digs in the class. He's really, really impactful there. He doesn't miss rotations. He's just like a smart defender and very, very sound and good. He's just a really, really good all-around player. I think just gets like wildly underrated on both ends on account of things he didn't get to show at Kentucky, like the runner game, with some of the defensive versatility, and I think a lack of appreciation for, I think, the level of guard finisher that he is, the team defender that he is. He's just a really good all-around player.
All right, let's get into the next one. You got it?
Sure. Yeah, it's cashiggy_11. It's a 21 question. Do you guys have a favorite international prospect after Roko or Usman Garuba?
The only other one like I'm really into that I've seen is Mavi King, who I talked about a couple episodes ago, I think, at this point. Like 3D plus wing. Really impressive on and off ball defender. off-ball offense, like the shot a lot, despite it's not perfect mechanically. Like, he doesn't really dip, and the rhythm is sometimes off. But I think the percentage has been really good, and the versatility and volume are all good. And I like the touch, and there's the cutting, and some of he's a fluid athlete. I'm a big fan of him. There are prospects like Josh Giddey and Ibu Badji, who I like a little less. But I think it's like there's a lot of international guys I haven't watched, like a couple of like the German bigs, Matthew Strazel, Allison, that I haven't dove into enough. If Rokas doesn't declare, Rokas could still like pull his name, right? Or can he?
I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, if he's there, I think it'd be a good international class, but like not one that I'm like crazy informed on at the moment. So,
yeah, I'm not super informed on the internationals yet either. But I like Allison. I've liked him. He's a pretty impressive guard.
I like have emoted him now just because like I don't feel confident enough. But like he's good, no doubt. Like
yeah, no, I don't have like a in depth eval of him at all. It's just like yeah, I've seen some of him and he's popped. He's interesting. But yet still have a lot of internationals to watch for next year.
Yeah. All right. The next question we have, contract year C. If Mason Jones did gain between 6 to 10 inches on his vertical as a late bloomer per his pro day, how would that affect his draft stock / NBA projection?
Okay. So I'm going to kind of dodge this question and then I'll kind of answer it. We've said several times now, don't use the combine numbers this year. Definitely don't use pro day numbers. Definitely in general, don't use max vert. It's just not really very instructive. If you just think about it, like how max vert would present itself in a basketball game, occasionally in transition, when there's no one around, maybe if you are, being defended by Anthony Edwards in the corner and back cut him, you'll have a wide open runway. But your max vert's not going to come into play that much in basketball. It doesn't really matter. And it certainly doesn't matter for someone's projection. What matters a lot more functional aspects of vertical. So, how do you explode off 1 foot? How do you explode through contact? How quickly can you get off the ground? Those things matter a lot more. So max vert in general, don't use it. Definitely don't use combine numbers this year. And most certainly don't use pro day numbers. But now to the actual question, suppose Mason Jones is a superior vertical athlete. Now, I don't care that much. Mason Jones, to me, the issues are with creating separation, not with finishing, like highly, highly skilled finisher. I think it would benefit him a little bit, certainly, if he could elevate more. But I care more about him never being open. If you added length to Mason Jones, I think that would be more compelling than adding vertical to him. Yeah. He's just like not really a vertical based finisher. I don't think it matters that much.
Yeah, I said the same. Like, I don't care because he's already like an elite finisher without it. I think it would like even if he did, like it would be unwise for him to change his brand of finishing. Like what he does is outlier great, like the strength, the contortion, the touch, all that. Like to like add a like try to add a vertical aspect to complicate that, like I would say no to that. Like it doesn't matter. I mean, I think defensively for like making rotations and stuff, but like does that make him like a quicker leaper? Like just because he can jump higher at his max, does that mean his load time is lessened? Like probably not. So just not like again, like combine numbers. Shooting drills, vertical stuff, bench press reps, even like don't use any of them. But yeah, and in the case of Mason Jones, like not something that really changes my perception of him at all.
Do you want to do one more or do you want to cut this part too?
I think we can do one more.
Okay. Yeah. All right. From Fred McNBA, it seems like an important part of defense is a mobile four to play next to a rim protector like Draymond, Millsap, Giannis, Bam. Do you see a Kongwu playing any four in the NBA in a similar role? Who are some other prospects that can play that role?
Not really. I don't think just because one, I'm not sure. Like he's very plus mobile covering pick and rolls for his size. But I don't know if he's mobile enough to really play the four full time. Nor do I think he has the offense too as well. He's strictly a five offensively with, being a very, very good role man, despite some finishing concerns. He's explosive. He leaps off the floor quickly. He's going to be a good finisher, I think. No doubt. The short roll passing's improving. I just don't want you don't want him like handling on the perimeter or having like a heavy diet of spot ups. And that kind of would necessitate playing in at the four for that. So yeah, I mean, I guess like you could in a pinch, like since like he is 6'9", I guess like occasionally, but that definitely wouldn't be my preference. And that's not why you're drafting Onyeka, I think, to play him at the four. Then like other guys, there aren't really like many other like mobile fours in this class. Like if you want to like slide like Okoro or Vassell or Denny up to the four, like they could kind of qualify with their skills. Jaden is another one who kind of qualifies as well. Woodard with like, we talk about like the three and rim protection guys. Pat Will isn't like mobile in the perimeter switchy sense. He's very not mobile laterally, but he moves well from, you know, covering ground to the interior. So like these guys are like really rare, like these like mobile fours, like looking for, like we talked about like a couple of episodes ago, and a lot like looking for like Millsaps and Draymonds and Giannis's and Bams is generally like a lost cause and a thing you shouldn't do because they're so unique, and they like because they they're unique and they're so valuable because their skill sets can't be replicated. So if you're looking for someone to replicate those skill sets to something close to a T, you're probably going to be disappointed. So
yeah, so I think that the rangy fours are very important in the NBA. That ground coverage that helps out rim protection is really, really important. I think Yek definitely cannot do that. I don't think he's mobile like that. He's mobile, but not like that. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to play him offensively as a four unless you're going to do like some of the really kind of painful Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid half-court offense where they're just like –
Or if you have like Cat at the five, or like
yeah. But if you're just gonna have like Onyeka, Kongwu, and Cody Zeller like cross screening, and then trying to get a seal, I'm not gonna really be very interested in watching that. Yeah, that sounds unpleasant. So Onyeka, Kongwu, definitely not your rangy four. He's a center, and a good one. But if you are looking for that rangy four type of guy in this class, I think there are a few options. Like Ben mentioned, Jaden is okay for it. Woodard's okay for it. But I aimed a bit higher instead. Poku and Patwell.
Yeah, Poku.
Yeah, both definitely can cover ground, can make plays from the weak side, bring that kind of interior presence in very different ways. Poku is going to cover a lot of ground and use his length. Crazy instincts. Pat is also very good instinctually. Doesn't have that level of ground coverage, though he does, I think, cover ground pretty well. But much more skilled, I would say, as an interior defender. Really good with verticality. Has very strong second jump ability. Very good vertical athlete. Just, you know, I think very much kind of fits this archetype. Not as long as Poku, but Pat Will uses his length incredibly well all over the floor, not just at the rim. He uses his length very well on the perimeter as well. So yeah, those two guys stand out to me for sure. I think there are probably more of these guys in the future, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, as it becomes more important, and talk about this a little next time, but like, yeah.
Yeah.
You need it in the NBA.
Yeah, so I think very much the right idea here, like these guys are really important, but I don't think Onyeka is one of them. He's something else that's also important.
Yeah. All right, so that's going to be it for part two. Thank you all for listening. You can follow the pod at Prep2ProPod on Twitter. Follow Max at MaxAcarlin. Follow me at Ben_Pfeiffer_. Again, if your question hasn't been answered, it'll likely be answered in part three. So with that, we will see you all next time.